Welcome to The Third Degree. I'm Chris Voss, host of The Third Degree, author of Never Split the Difference.
Thank you, Chris.
Negotiating as if your life depends upon it. And I have one of the most beautiful, interesting, amazing, dynamic people on the planet. I don't know where to start. NJ Goldston, Webby Award-winning force of nature, fashion icon, helping everybody understand fashion, and I don't even know where to go. LA's Leading Ladies of Style by Angelino Magazine.
Yes, that was really fun. That was a few years ago. It was the inaugural issue, and we had to style ourselves. We were the first group, the five of us, selected for Angelino Magazine, and it came out of, you know, my role as part of the Blonde and the Brunette, my Webby-winning blog. And, of course, I had to shape myself, and I did it in my typical form, which is my uniform, pretty much black and white with a punch of color and a little architectural modern drama.
Where did you come from? Are you from another planet? You are just so awesome. You just, Angelino Magazine needs you to start in their inaugural issue. That's incredible.
It was really fun, and it was a great shoot. It was at a hotel lobby in Los Angeles, in Santa Monica, and we had to be creative. So it was really a great day, and definitely one of the highlights in my career in all these years. That was just fun. So,
which
honored.
I think is one of the reasons you're so successful, because you like that fun.
I do like to have fun, and I feel, you know, I'm a left side, right side brain person. I've got the creative side, I've got the business side. But at the end of the day, I mean, I still have this creative passion for everything. I love to write, and my life revolves around having that quiet time to be creative and develop ideas and dive deep into whatever's going on, whether it's the fashion world, the business world, making sure I'm continuing to change all the time and keep up with things. And change is so important. I think at the beginning of my career, I didn't really understand always the importance of change. And if you don't adapt, you're going to be left behind. And when you work at companies and with people, it's so important to leave your mind free and open.
Change.
Absolutely. And it took me a while to learn that dance.
What do you mean? What caused you to realize that was a dance you had to learn?
Well, I was at a large corporation actually down on Wall Street towards the beginning of my career. And I realized, and it took me a while, as I said, that when you're with a large company or even a small company, that if you stick to your ways and you don't adapt to what's going on in the environment and you don't leave yourself open to ideas and change, people see you as resistant. And you need to embrace what everybody else is bringing to the table and what's going on in a company. It can be corporate, it can be social, you following the news, whatever it is. You have to integrate all that into your life and realize that everything's always changing. And if you embrace change, you're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Well, yeah, fun. But here's a fine line. How do you remain true to who you are and embrace change at the same time?
Wow, that's a great question.
And here's why I ask.
Okay.
Because I think one of the, as an outside observer, mm-hmm. As a man, mm-hmm. one of the struggles for women in the business world is how to be successful in business and not become a man or be man-like. Because
right.
if being man-like, more men, we don't need more men in business. We need outside perspectives. We don't need more duplicates. We're not going to get farther that way. And if I may, when I first started law enforcement a long time ago, when women were just coming up in law enforcement, having no role models, they had a hard time retaining their femininity. And I saw a lot of women in law enforcement 20, 30 years ago consumed by it and losing their femininity. Mm-hmm. You are nothing if not feminine. You're beautiful. You retain that despite how difficult the demands business world may have been and still is. So there's part of you that refuses to give up.
I think that's absolutely true. And one of the issues that happened, and a lot of women led the way for me, is that women didn't have any role models. There were so few out
right, right.
there. They didn't have the example. So they thought, because they were grappling with the introduction into all these different roles and being able to grow in the work environment. So they didn't have anybody to figure it out with them. So they naturally sort of assumed a more masculine approach to things. I think I came into the game a little bit later and I said, I'm going to be true to myself and I'm going to be who I am, but I'm absolutely going to try and learn from other people. I was lucky enough to have a lot of great male and female mentors. And what I wanted to emulate was what they were doing in business successfully and their business skills. I wasn't actually trying to emulate a certain masculine mannerism because I didn't feel that was me, but I certainly wanted to learn what they were doing well and see how I could benefit from that. And hopefully different people would take me under their wing and give me their skills and teach me things. And by putting myself out there and saying, I want to learn, I was always a hard worker.
Hard work.
Then people started giving me the benefit of some of their skills. But I must admit, early in my career, I have long hair, as you know. I would often have my hair back in a ponytail. I didn't know what to do.
Right. What do you do with your hair?
Yeah.
Because it's very feminine.
Right. But then I just decided that it's important to be me. And it was all about the work.
So be yourself and still learn and adapt. Be willing to adapt to the environment, to change, to learn. Do you think the people mentored you without them actually knowing that you were learning that much from them? Did you look to people to learn from sort of unofficially? You said role models. Role model and mentor might be two different things.
That's true. I think you're absolutely right. A role model is someone that you might see in the public eye or at a distance that you say, I would like to be like them and emulate them in certain ways. A mentor is actually someone you're interacting with every day. And I've had many great bosses in my career. And I felt like they worked with me and they, besides giving me positive feedback, they gave me constructive negative feedback. And personally, when I make a mistake or I don't do something right, I spend so much more time thinking and agonizing about that just so I can learn from it. And hopefully I won't repeat it. And I hope I learn not to do something that way again, but I actually teach myself to do something better.
How do you stop yourself from agonizing to the point where it's paralyzing?
Well, I'm going to cite two books. One's a very, very...
Never Split the Difference? No.
Yes, that was my second book.
All right.
That was what you wrote in your book about try and take emotion out of the equation.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure if I quoted you correctly.
It's close,
but I'll let you repeat it in a second. The other one is actually Dale Carnegie's really old book. He's way before my time, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living.
Ooh.
And I think that's a great book. And I carried it almost for 5 years at the early part of my career when I was getting immobilized sometimes by emotion or what was happening or what could go wrong. And he always recenters you just like Waze. And says, you know, how you can cope with those emotions and basically always ask the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I think about the incident that's close to what you've done in your career. And he cites a story in that book about how during, I think it was World War II, if I'm correct, and one of his clients was being interrogated, I think either by the Japanese or the Germans. And if he didn't do something right, he was going to get killed. And the man sort of came to his thought about the whole thing and said, what's the worst thing that could happen? Relaxed and somehow got himself through the situation. So, I mean, there's some people dealing with things in life and death issues. So if you look on the spectrum, you can back yourself down to the severity of what's happening.
Interesting. You're an optimistic person by nature.
Yes. The glass is half full.
Yeah. How did you become that way? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut. And my father was in the aeronautics industry. And my mother was in the design industry, an art consultant, and way ahead of her time. She was a graduate of Parsons School of Design, NYU in art history and education. And they were both optimists, and they also were all about, you know, just being your own person. And one of the things they always talked to me about is, you know, something could happen, and bad things did end up happening in terms of losses in my family. And they gave me the skills and the stamina and the strength to say, you know what, you can keep going.
And you have.
I have.
Brothers and sisters?
I had a brother. He's no longer living.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. So,
Mom and Dad still around?
No.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, they did a great job bringing you to the planet for the rest of us.
Thank you. Thank you. So I think those early lessons have really stood the test of time. And my mother...
Lessons of hard work and being optimistic.
Hard work, being optimistic, being independent and self-sufficient is really, really important in life. And but looking on the bright side of things, even when things are not necessarily going the way that you want. And
what good is that? What good is it to look on a bright? I mean, I think I know, but I want to know.
Well, it's interesting because I'm writing my next article as a contributor to Forbes.
For Forbes.
And there's something in that article about two founders talking about how they don't like the word failure. And when they reference that, they talk about how they like to work the problem. And I love that. And I think that's one of the things I do, and really other people do who are successful when they're up against something very difficult. And I think that's one of the things that's a theme throughout your book. It's about working the problem and working the issue and working the negotiation. So you have to discover that for yourself and then begin to start putting and practicing those skills. You're not always going to succeed. But the more you practice, the better the skills hopefully get.
Well, there's some real timeless ideas here. I mean, you're like Matt Damon in The Martian. He said, work the problem.
I just
watched
that.
He saved himself. He survived.
That's right.
Right? Yes. Work the problem. Stay with it. Focus on a problem. Work the problem.
Right. And sometimes one of the things that's difficult when you're in a problem is sometimes it's so intense. It's so important to not have that knee-jerk reaction and to step away and say, okay, let me just rethink this for a while. I don't have the answer. I might not know what to do. Let me just calm down for a bit and think about it before I just do something. And it's so easy, again, to it's not always easy to rein in those emotions.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do.
Really is. That's my hardest task every day, I think.
And there's a difference between self-talk and what people can say to you or what you can say to others. Because you can say to yourself, calm down.
Right.
And it'll work. And if somebody says to you, calm down, you'd be like, how dare you tell me, calm down!
Exactly. One of the things I do when I'm like that is I write something and I put it in a note in my phone. And then I've expressed my feelings and somehow it's manifested itself. And then I say, don't press the send button.
Oh, so you get it out.
Yeah.
You just don't press, you know, on that email or that text message.
Yes, exactly.
You can't unsend it, so you know, but you do express it.
I do express it.
And you kind of let it sit there.
Right. And that way I can let it just think on it for a while and say, okay. And I go back and I read it and I go, you know, that really shouldn't be sent to anyone.
How long before you go back and read it?
I usually wait like an hour or two.
All right. So you can get yourself leveled out in an hour or two. Take
right.
a few deep breaths.
Yeah.
Imagine the assassinations, but don't actually carry them out, right?
It's kind of like that. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you need to do that. And then, of course, there's always like, if I can get a latte, that sort of makes a lot of the world, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Find a way to, you know, put a little difference in the body chemistry.
Exactly.
Kick the system back into gear.
Exactly.
Optimism.
Mm-hmm. So I try to find little things that will help me keep things under control.
Little things that help you keep things under control.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's writing that note in my phone that never gets sent.
Ah, all right.
Something gets really difficult, then I might say, get up from my desk and take a walk and say that that's a good way to just, you know, calm down.
If you can find a way to give yourself a moment.
Yes. That's a better way.
You're not trying to get all the way back in control immediately. You're just trying to give yourself a little bit of breathing room.
Right. Exactly. So what was the phrase in your book that I misquoted that you can repeat now?
It's not that we try to take emotions out of things. That we understand that they're there and deal with them. You know, it's part of our makeup. Taking emotions out is like trying to take breathing out.
Right.
Just not going to happen. But, and it's not emotions that we want to get rid of. It's negative emotions, which is why I always observe when somebody's naturally positive. Because it's actually a competitive edge. You're smarter when you're positive. Do you know that? You're pretty smart anyway.
Well, I try my best. And I think that's the thing. I'm just trying my best all the time. But I also recognize when I fail.
Here's what I hear there. I hear that you take it easy on yourself. I try my best is like, all right, I know I'm not perfect. I probably kick my own butt more than I need to. But every now and then I need to have a little compassion for myself. I think you care for yourself a little bit. You try to take care of yourself?
I do. I absolutely try and take care of myself. And I also think it's very important to have like quiet or alone time. And that's one of the things that I do for myself. Because I think that it helps you recalibrate. And when you're not absorbing an environment and lots of other people, then you sort of get rid of all that noise that's around you, whether it's business or personal or whatever, and it could be good or bad noise. It sort of just lets you cleanse your mind and your soul for a while.
You sound like an introvert.
I think I probably really am at heart.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there was a time when introvert was not a good thing. Everybody needed to be extroverted, but introverts think more than other people do. Introverts are introspective. You know, they take care of themselves.
I think that that's absolutely true. And there's definitely a certain part of me that's an introvert, but there's also another part of me that, you know, loves life, loves being out, loves being social, loves all the interaction that happens, whether it's in the workplace or social and I love all those things. But I think with what's happening with technology, that's the thing that's tipped the balance a lot lately. We're so inundated with text messages and emails and videos and so much media that it's important to just sort of detox sometimes.
Ah, tip the balance.
Right.
Because people feel out of control.
I think it's a regular thing, and maybe I'm wrong, but to feel a little out of control with all the media that's coming at us, all the engagement that's coming at us. So the important thing is to just find those quiet times. One of the things I wrote about this year was I took some hints from other people is how important it is. Maybe you're only working Monday through Friday with all of your emails and all the different things. And maybe on the weekends, there's a little bit more of a barrier or a fence in terms of responding to everybody. And I tend to do that on the weekends only in small groups of emails and then make sure that I'm not working the whole time. Otherwise, it just permeates your entire life and you aren't detoxing.
Ah, so you got to recharge. You got to compartmentalize a little bit. All right, so let's talk some more about this Forbes blog thing. What is this all about? Women at Forbes? What is that all about?
It's just a really exciting moment in my life that I was asked to become a contributor, and my swim lane at Forbes is highly actionable business advice, and it's on the Women at Forbes site. And women, I think, and especially millennials, are turning to Forbes and other resources for practical advice on things that are going on in the workplace and in their lives. It's also lifestyle advice. And they're looking for feedback and information from lots of different sources. And this is a way for me to contribute and bring the type of information they want. I try and make it highly topical. Sometimes it's a little bit ripped from the headlines. Sometimes it's not. And I also have been getting lots of requests from young women about what they would like to hear about. So that's exactly why when we had the chance to meet and I had a chance to do our interview, I had been having so much feedback from so many women about they wanted to learn to negotiate better. They were feeling a little uncomfortable and shy in the workplace. And I thought, who better than you to reach out as an expert and give us advice on how to handle certain things because they're not sure who to turn to.
Right, right. Well, and I think I told you, as you know, I think women are naturally better negotiators than men anyway.
Right, and I love that. I think I might have written that. I can't remember.
But you are. I mean, if anybody has a head start on getting to emotional intelligence-based negotiations, I mean, I don't know if it's nature or nurture. I don't want to put it off to either, or maybe it's both. But, you know, men, you know, we're not nurtured to be emotionally intelligence-based. But that's where the key is.
Yeah, I agree. But women are trying, I think, to learn how to take that and use it successfully in the workplace so that they're doing, again, a better job, that they're moving their careers along, and they're getting a greater sense of confidence in whatever they're doing.
Right, right. And what holds them back in the need for greater sense of confidence? You know, I have opinions on that, but I'm not talking to you to hear my opinions.
You know, I think it's different for every woman. And I really don't know. I'd love to say that I had done all the research on that, but I haven't. I think other women like Joanne Lipman, who recently wrote a book on That's What She Said, has a lot of the research on that. And women are just getting the skills and finding their way in learning how to integrate themselves better. And I think also now there's more founders and entrepreneurs. So they're trying to figure out, well, if they're young and they're starting a company and how to lead it, where are the resources and the things so they can do a good job and they want to be successful. So they're trying to arm themselves with the skill sets by going out and doing this research.
All right. So tell us again, just before we take a break,
okay,
where we find your Forbes blog.
It's on Women at Forbes at Forbes.com. And I have a site there, my column under my name, the initials N and J, and then Goldston, G-O-L-D-S-T-O-N.
All right. So we will take a break. But in the meantime, go to that blog and get wisdom. This has been The Third Degree, hosted by me, Chris Voss. If you want to learn more about negotiation, there are two ways. Number one, if you like visual learning, go to the Black Swan Group's YouTube channel. Black Swan Group is my company that teaches and trains negotiation. Our YouTube channel will show you some great videos about getting better at negotiation and links to some other cool stuff like my Google Talk. Number two, if you like to learn by reading, buy Never Split the Difference on Amazon. It's a book on negotiation. It's done very well. You'd love it. Buy it on Amazon because they get the best price. You might also like subscribing to our negotiation newsletter, The Edge. The Edge comes out once a week, every Tuesday morning. It's short and sweet, and it's easy to read. The way you subscribe, because it's free, subscribe to The Edge by texting the word FBI empathy. Make that all one word. Don't let your spell check autocorrect it. Put a space between FBI and empathy. FBI empathy to 22828. Send FBI empathy to the number 22828. You get a dialogue box back that'll subscribe you to The Edge.